Welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. Now let's begin.
Hello, fellow podcast listener, and welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. My name is Chris Lockhart. I am your host this week. Joining me online, first up, is my co-host in crime, Mr. Kevin Decent. How's it going, Kevin?
It's going well. I think we're all doing well staying away from the corona so far.
I'm not drinking Corona right now. I am drinking a Kokanee, though. I don't know if you guys get Kokanee down in the States.
What is it called again?
Kokanee. It's a beer based out of BC, but it's very popular across Canada. It's a, if you look at the beer can, like if you Google it, the beer can basically has like a mountain scape on it, and if you look closely at your beer can, you can find a Sasquatch on the mountain somewhere.
You're kidding.
Oh, how fun is that?
Yeah, they move it. And then
they move it?
Yeah, like you'll see the silhouette of a Sasquatch. It's kind of like a Where's Waldo type of thing. But sometimes it's not on the can. Sometimes it is. But yeah, they've been doing that for years. But yeah, like as far as like the bigger beers in Canada, like, you know, like Molson or Budweiser, Coors, I find Kokanee the best out of the big brands.
I gotta look for this now.
Mostly
for the Sasquatch.
Yes, the Sasquatch is pretty cool. Also joining us this evening is the lovely Miss M. How's it going, Miss M?
It's going very well. I'm very happy to be back.
Excellent. So this is actually like a two-part episode. So this is the second part. Last episode, we talked about our top positive ONG moments of pop culture. For this episode, we are going the other direction. We're talking about the top negative ONG moments in pop culture. Now, when we did this, or when I planned this episode, this can be taken one of two ways, I think, that a negative ONG moment could be something bad happened, either, you know, in the TV show, the movie, the comic book, the book, whatever medium it is, but it was actually a good thing, like in the sense that it, you know, it changed the way the show was going, it changed the movie, you know, it changed things for the better, maybe, you know, just the shock factor of it all. But it also could be a negative. It could be something, you know, like a jump the shark moment or something that's completely out of character, out of base of what you're used to. So on this episode, that's our topic, and then we will move into I got a couple segments here. I got a brain candy segment that I'm going to be starting, which we kind of started last episode, but I didn't quite have a name for it. But that's basically where I'm going to ask the people on this podcast what we're watching or what we're reading or that sort of thing. That's what the brain candy part of it is. And then we'll move into our Enders segment. So let us move on to our main topic, and that is the top negative ONG moments in pop culture. So, Miss M, we're very happy to have you on these last two episodes. It's been a real honor having you here. So why don't you get us started? What is your first on your list of top negative ONG moments in pop culture?
Okay, so this one, there's a little bit of a backstory to it, but it and this was the first one that I thought of when we were discussing what, you know, that this topic was going to be, and that is all my children. And to set up the negative moment, I need to go back to kind of when the show first came out.
Okay.
Erica Kane has been the main character of that show. I mean, it ended in 2012, but mm-hmm. she was the main character. And in the 70s, they wrote a storyline where she had the first legal abortion on American television.
Oh.
And it was like a huge historical moment for television because it was really tackling an issue that, you know, I mean, is a very divisive issue. And so that piece happened. It went down as a historical moment in soap opera history, all this stuff. Fast forward to like the mid 2000s, I want to say like maybe 2007, 2008. The show kind of revisited that storyline, but in a very like bizarre and kind of like, for me, it was a bit negative. They brought on this doctor who was like obsessed with Erica Kane. And it turns out that he was the doctor who performed her abortion and, lo and behold, had taken the fetus from her and implanted it into his wife. And so she gave birth to the baby. He grew up, and then he comes to Pine Valley to be like, why is my dad here? Like, because the mother had passed away or whatever. Finds out that he was actually meant to be aborted by Erica Kane, and then they like, you know, they go at it, they hate each other for a while, and then they finally like reconcile. But it was just a very like weird, like just a very bizarre way of like rewriting history, and it was just, it was a lot. Like it kind of jumped the shark a moment, I think, for a lot of fans, me included, because it was just like, what's going on? This is, there are sometimes like kind of far-fetched elements in soap operas, but this one was like, what is going on? And then they killed him. He got shot and died. And so it was kind of like, what was the whole, you know, it was just a mess. So that was definitely the first thing that I thought of when I thought of like top negative moments in pop culture.
Wow.
For me.
All right.
Yeah, go ahead, Kevin.
So this isn't something, like, this is something that's bubbled up here and there, but I know way too much of a certain time frame of Young and the Restless than mm-hmm. I should. So, out of curiosity for all my children, do they age in real time, or do they do those jumps for the kids?
Oh, some kids age in real time. Other kids, yeah, there's a total jump. Like, you'll have a baby, and then, like, 3 years later, that baby's, like, 8 years old.
Right. Yeah. Or then teenager, just, we can have, like, the young pretty dating and all that
jump. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So, but this one would have been real time, technically, then.
Yes.
To pull a 70s story and go. I have a soap opera writer that actually follows me on Twitter. Well, he used to write soap operas, not now. But I gotta reach out to him and ask him about this. Because there's no way there wasn't a backlash in that world, too.
Oh,
what
yeah.
What are you gonna do? You gotta go with what you write. And the way soap operas turn over is so fast, you don't have time to argue this.
Yeah. And a lot of fans, you know, I mean, the side of fans that were, you know, that believe in pro-choice and all that kind of stuff, they were like, you've completely twisted this, like, historical moment for television, and you've mm-hmm. kind of, like, you know, you've kind of, like, made it into something, you know, like, corny or whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
it can be corny too. Like, you can have your roll your eyes moments. You know,
yes.
Patrick Duffy appearing in the shower.
Yes.
Like, you can have stuff like that. But you're absolutely right. You don't take an iconic landmark moment and erase it.
Yeah.
So how long was his character on before they killed him off?
He was on for, I want to say, like a year or two, and he kind of went on to become somewhat of a big actor. I mean, he started in like a couple movies, and I don't really know what's happened to him since. He kind of looked like a young Tom Cruise. So he was in like a couple movies, he was not on there for very long. And then like the doctor and his obsession with her, like it was real creepy and just like, I mean, there's just a lot of like icky stuff about it. Like it wasn't, it was just a stretch, I think, mm-hmm. for a lot of fans of the show.
Yeah, that's a big stretch even for a soap opera. To think that they could have even done that back in the 70s. But, excellent.
I mean, Passions would have found it to be a stretch.
Yes, right. I remember Passions.
All right, well, oh, sorry, Kev, go ahead.
Quick question. Because, the first abortion one I knew on TV was Maude.
Yes, but mm-hmm, that one, yeah. It was not legalized. It was legal in New York. It was legal in New York, but it was not legal across, like, Roe versus Wade had not happened yet.
Okay.
Or it was in the process of happening, because I think Maude happened a year before the storyline on All My Children, and by that point, it had been legal across the country.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
And yeah, you did clarify that from the beginning. I really wasn't sure.
Yeah, no, they were very close. They were very, very close.
Okay.
And on a side note, I feel like I'd read that Maude, that there was a lot of backlash that was faced for that decision. And with the All My Children story, there was not as much backlash because according to Agnes Nixon, who wrote that storyline, Erica Kane was already kind of like the bad girl that you love to hate. So I don't want to say like audience members gave her a pass, but it was not as, they did not come for her the way that they came for Maude. You know, I mean, it was
when your villain does it.
Yeah.
It's not the same.
Yeah. I mean, that was kind of the theory, the reasoning, because the reaction was not as visceral as the storyline on Maude.
Interesting. All right. Well, I will go next. The first on my list is in the bad top negative OMG moments category. And it actually just happened recently. And I'm probably going to go into more details on this in the Ender segment. But it recently happened in episode 5 of Star Trek Picard. The opening scene. I had no idea what I was watching. Like, honestly, I was watching it on the app, the Crave app up here in Canada. So I knew I selected an episode of Picard, but then it begins with this torture scene. This scene where you see someone literally ripping an eyepiece out of someone's eye socket. And it was the best way to describe it. It was this scene from that movie Hostel. I don't know if you guys remember Hostel. It was that movie that came out 10, 15 years ago where those backpackers are, you know, in Europe, those American guys or whatever, and they get drugged, they wake up, and they're literally tortured. And I think only one of them survives. So that's what it kind of felt like, because this guy's on this table, he's getting this eyepiece literally ripped out of his skull, and then the doctor or whatever she was, I don't know, it's almost like she was taunting him, and she's like, oh, little buddy, you know, and this guy's obviously in pain, right? Like, there's no anesthetic, there's nothing going on there. Like, he's in pain, he's screaming. And this doctor, whatever she is, goes to him, oh, little buddy, I got to find that cortical node or whatever she was saying. Where is it? And she's about to drill right into his skull with this drill. And then 7 of 9 busts in and kills everybody. And then she, you know, because she knows this guy that's, you know, in pain and everything else. And she mercy kills him. She puts her phaser up to his heart and shoots him. And that's how the episode started.
Okay. Wow.
For me, like, I did, like, I'm not the biggest Voyager fan. Like, I only watched maybe half of the episodes, to be honest with you. But apparently this character was first introduced in season 6 of Voyager. There was a bunch of Borg that basically got, you know, the doctor was working on rehabilitating them. You know, they were not part of the collective anymore. He was taking their Borg parts off. I want to say the character's name was Ejeb, I believe. He was part of the Voyager guest cast for season 6 and season 7. And I believe in the series finale, you actually see him, because the series finale featured a future Janeway, an Admiral Janeway. You actually see him as a Starfleet officer eventually. And in this episode, he was also a Starfleet officer. He was wearing a Starfleet uniform as he's being operated on. And like I said, it reminded me of a scene from Hostel, just, you know, because they're in this room. There's a bunch of different people getting their Borg parts ripped out of them, like literally ripped out of them. You hear people screaming. And then, like, yeah, this doctor was almost taunting him in the way that those torturers were tormenting those guys in the Hostel movie. And it was really dark. And I sent both of you a picture of all those different violent scenes from Star Trek's past.
Yep.
Violence has happened in the past with Star Trek. Probably, I think, in my opinion, the most violent scene on Star Trek was in season 1, Star Trek Next Generation, the episode Conspiracy, when them bug creatures were infiltrating Starfleet and they would, you know, crawl into people's mouths and take over their minds stuff. And then the episode ends with Picard and Riker shooting the Starfleet officer that the mother creature's hiding in, shooting him in the head. His head blows up. Then the mother rips out of the guy's stomach, and then they shoot and kill the mother creature. And then the last shot of the scene is you see the guy's body sitting in this chair with all these dead bug aliens around it. Like, it very graphic. It was very graphic, probably the darkest scene, in my opinion, that they've ever done in Star Trek. And I know after that, like, I know subsequently they, you know, said they regretted doing that. They shouldn't have done that. Apparently Gene Roddenberry hated it. He was not happy about it. And they kind of retracted. They said, you know, we should never have done that, right? This scene in Star Trek Picard kind of, in my mind, was a lot more graphic, because the violence was very real, like the screams, you know, pulling the eyepiece out. It was, you know, seeing the blood, because, like, when she pulls the eyepiece out, she throws it into, like, this tub of parts that she's taken out already, and you see all the blood and stuff, like, all splattered around. Like, it was very graphic. Yeah. And I realize, you know, Star Trek's changing. I realize, you know, this isn't my old Star Trek. But in my mind, like, this kind of violence is not needed in Star Trek. Star Trek, even back in that episode of Next Generation when they blew that guy up and with the bugs and everything, you know, like, going forward, you know, like, a lot of their episodes were positive, right? Like, it was always a positive vision of the future. Star Trek Picard's really dystopian. Like, it's really bumming me out, like, how dark it's gotten. And that scene, like I said, like, I couldn't believe it, like, that what I was watching. And what really got me is finding out that it was directed by Jonathan Frakes. It was directed by Commander Riker.
Oh, wow.
Huh.
And he made that scene. Like, it just blows my mind. Like, he knew Gene Roddenberry. He was friends with Gene Roddenberry. I never met Gene Roddenberry, but everything I know about the guy, everything I've read, he would not have been cool with that. Like, it really was a negative OMG moment. And like I said, in the Ender segment, I'll get a little bit more into the episodes that have aired. But, yeah, that's my number one pick. But anyway, Kevin, let's move on to your first pick.
Yeah, and I might ask questions during Enders on that.
Sure.
I'll see if you answer my questions first, yep. Anyway.
Yeah, you bet.
All right. So I'm going with a negative, and I think anything I have tonight is more of a negative. Oh, my God. Bad. Like, I can't believe you're doing this. Okay. You have ruined the show, this movie, whatever.
Yep.
I'm done. And this one, very much so. And that is the series finale of How I Met Your Mother.
Mm.
Now, did either of you watch the show
At
all? Sorry.
I watched the occasional episode, but I do know how it ended, though. I do remember seeing that.
Yeah, I didn't really watch it, but I remember the sort of the outcome of that ending and how people kind of responded to it.
It wasn't the mom dying, because you knew she did mm-hmm. from episode one. You know, hey, I'm telling you stories about your mother because she's no longer here. So you knew that was going to happen. The thing that got me the most, well, two. She dies. We've told this wonderful story. And over the course of last season takes place within like 1 week, pretty much. All 22, 24 episodes. And who becomes the mother is on her way to the wedding venue. She's a musician there or something, I forget what. And she meets everyone else first before she meets Ted, who she will eventually marry and have the children with that they've been talking to for all the seasons. And you, as a viewer, fall in love with her before she's even met him. And it's so beautiful and wonderful, and you're like, of course, this is worth all the build-up. Everything we've gone through with this character is worth it for this woman, and we know they only have a short time together, but she's going to be part of this group and this family of friends and everything. It'll be wonderful. And then he ends with, and so your mom died, and I would like to go and date your Aunt Robin now.
Hmm.
Okay. So it's not how I met your mother, it's how I'm going to meet your new mom, your stepmom. And what kills it is, and spoiler alert for anyone listening for a show that's been off the air at least 5 years now at this point, I think. Robin was married to Barney, Neil Patrick Harris.
Mm-hmm.
They got together over the last 2 years of the show. And you see this ladies' man, playboy, bimbo, male slob, whatever you want to say, change his entire life as he falls in love with this woman and wants to be better for her. And it's an incredible character development and arc of this lecherous character becoming noble because of the love of a woman. And it's really sweet and amazing. You root for them, and you know, you're excited about the change. And sitcom characters don't really change that much, because that's the whole point of a sitcom. You just, you know, throw on syndication and all. But he grows and everything. And then the last couple minutes of the show, it's like, oh yeah, and he cheated on Robin, so they broke up. The hell? So we didn't learn anything? And then you find out, because, I mean, everyone just crapped on this ending. You find out, oh yeah, we filmed another ending that, you know, everything works out and everyone's happy and all, but we didn't like it. Screw you at this point. Your audience of millions of people that have invested years in the show want an ending. Sometimes you got to give it to them.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's fan service for a reason. As I have invested my time in this, I need an ending. But no, as writers, like, yeah, no, screw you. We don't want to. So and my wife and I, when we were dating, we watched it every week. I had the first, like, we bought the first couple of seasons on DVD, we watch through it, then we watch it every week. We're excited, we talk about it with other people. Since that episode aired, we watched it live at the time. I have not watched 1 second of that show again. And we got rid of all of our sets. That's how upset I was as a fan. Like, I'm done. I do not want. I invested so much in the show, and you, the writers, shat on it, and I'm done. Never went back to it.
So obviously, like, this wasn't, you don't think this was planned from the beginning? This was just something that they spitballed at the last season, you think?
I think they had a plan that they were, because the first episode, you assume Ted and Robin, and Robin is Agent Maria Hill from S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
And MCU. You assume that the story's going to be about them. That, you know, are they going to hook up? Are they going to date? I don't know. It's all awkward and silly and, you know, sitcom-y. And then at the end he says, and that's how I met your aunt. You're like, whoa. So we're not even talking about her. This girl that you spent a half hour introducing us to and investing us in is not the mom of the show.
Yeah.
She's another character. Oh, geez, I wonder where this is going. So, I mean, that was a swerve from the get-go of, no, we're going to meet someone else. So I really feel like they waited until they knew it was going to be their last season and said, okay, now it's time to meet this girl. So we need to cast someone that the audience is going to love, that everyone's going to be excited about, that will be worth, yes, she is better than any other girl that's been on the show for him to finally end up with. And she was. You fell in love with her over a season. I really think that they just decided to swerve at the last minute to say, oh, you think we're going left, but we're going to go right. Okay, but everyone's at the party over to the left. Over to the right's just like an empty field that no one wants. Nah, we're going to go right. But everyone's over here. No, but you don't see it coming. I don't see it coming, but sometimes Google Maps tells me where I'm going, because mm-hmm. that's the way we're supposed to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent choice, Kevin. That was a good one. Miss M, you're number two on your list.
So number two, I need to say that there's going to be some spoilers. So if anyone has
goes
not
without
seen,
saying. Yeah.
Yes, like this is and this is a recent Rise of Skywalker. So any like, do not listen to this if you've not seen it yet, although I feel like most everyone has seen Rise of Skywalker. But mm-hmm. I think for me, the big negative moment, which I enjoyed the movie. I'm watching it. I'm, like, in it. I'm like, oh, my gosh. All these years have gone by. Like, we're finally here at this moment. And I think sometimes there are just things that go over my head that I don't. I mean, sometimes I'm really on it. I really pick up on things. And I can see kind of like, oh, that makes sense. But this one just, like, flew under my radar, and when it reached this point, which is when Rey and Kylo Ren kiss, I was just like, wait, what? Like, I don't understand mm-hmm. what is going on right here. It just took me out of the moment of, like, really just enjoying this movie, because I know that there was, like, there's a fan base that loves them together and, like, ships them and all this kind of stuff. And there was, like, some maybe a little bit of tension, in The Last Jedi. But, like, I never really, like, I was never like, oh, yeah, the two of them, they got this thing going on. I mean, for me, it was like they've been trying to kill each other for, like, three movies, So I felt like I was, like, watching a different movie than everyone else, because I had not realized that so many people were invested in, like, them being something, and that kiss, like, meant so much to so many people. But for me, it just totally threw me out of, like, what I was like, wait, like, they're gonna kiss? Like, so there's some kind, it just threw me for a loop. I wasn't really a fan of it, and it kind of, I don't know. It was a negative moment for me, because it's just not what I was, like, aware was, like, a thing. it made me feel kind of silly, because I was, like, just not thinking that that was going to be a thing.
Honestly, Miss M, I'm right there with you. I'm absolutely with you. Like, I thought after the, going into this movie, well, after I saw the previews, I knew Palpatine was coming into it. But after watching the last movie, the Last Jedi, I assumed Kylo Ren was going to be the big bad in the final movie.
Yeah.
And he was going to go full evil. And I assumed Rey was going to have to take him down. So yeah, when this movie kind of backpedaled that a little bit, and then there was this, you know, the kissing thing, I'm like, huh. You know, like, don't get me wrong, you know, he's a good-looking dude and everything, but he also killed his own father. You know, he also did a lot. He also did a lot of terrible things. Like, why? Yeah. Why are you kissing this guy? Yeah, it completely took me out of it. Absolutely, I agree with you.
See, I didn't get it.
And I also think.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Ms.
I'm sorry. Well, no, I was just gonna say, I really liked this idea that she was going to be this character that there wasn't going to be like a will she or won't she end up with someone. And I feel like, I don't know if the writers, I mean, I don't know what the intention truly was for that, but I know like so many fans like really wanted to see her like, you know, either with Finn or like I have a romance with Finn or like, oh, there's maybe there's a romance with Poe or, oh, you know, like there's this thing with her and Kylo Ren. And I was just like, I'm just seeing it as like she's making friends and like finally like being a part of a world where she's not like alone on this like desert planet. You know what I mean? Like it's not where I thought that, you know, that was going to go, mm-hmm. or at least what people kind of took away from that. I just wasn't, you know, I wasn't expecting it, but I'm sorry, Kevin, what were you going to say?
No, sorry. I saw it because I mean, Star Wars can't do romance. You know, we got awkward scenes in every trilogy, but it seemed more like not a passionate kiss of like, hey, if we both survive after this, you know, let's see what happens here. But like a kiss goodbye, like when someone's overly emotional at, you know, a high school graduation or whatever, and like, I miss you, I'll never see you again. It's like, we didn't hang out in school, so I don't know what this is all about. No, but it was more like, oh, we're done. All right. You know, here's a kiss. See you later. We're probably both about to die here soon.
Yeah.
Which was half right.
Yeah. And I think, like, when I kind of, like, got back into it, I was like, oh, I don't think it was really, you know, it's not, like, I don't think that's what it was supposed to be. But then, like, seeing, like, the other side, like, on social media, like, the people that were just so, like, oh, my God. They finally acknowledged something, and I was like, "Oh, wait a minute! So, what? What was that really supposed to be about? Like, you know, because so many people, I think, really wanted them to have some kind of like underlying thing, and it just really kind of like threw me for a trip, you know? Because I was like, "Wait a minute! I think we've all been watching very different movies, you know?" But, yeah,
it was fan service for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I was not aware that was something that needed to be fan service until after the movie. And I, you know, like you go on Twitter and I go down rabbit holes where I'll read like so many people's takes on movies. You know, like when I saw Last Jedi, I was like, oh, my God, I love this. This movie is so good. Like, I'm having so much fun. And then like I get on Twitter to see like, well, what do other people think? And I'm like, oh, my God, people think this is hot garbage. And I'm like, did I see, like, what's going on? And, I mean, I know, like, we shouldn't put all of our faith in social media. But, you know, like, I don't have, like, a large group of friends in my day-to-day life that I can just sit there and talk about Star Wars or talk about whatever. And so I go to social media to kind of see, like, you know, what's everyone saying? And I'm just always thrown for a loop when, you know, like, my reaction is maybe not... I don't want to say is in the minority because I truly don't know, you know, some people maybe are louder than it is or whatever, but you know, it's just interesting. It's very interesting.
Absolutely. Well, even when, like for me, like I know talking to one of my coworkers about the movie, he absolutely loved Rise of Skywalker. He thought it was great. And I was like, you know, I didn't take to it as well. But, I mean, as long as he's happy about it, that, you know, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, all right, well, I'll move on to my second one. And it is a storyline that took place in the Amazing Spider-Man comic book back in 2012 called Dying Wish.
No, not where I thought you were going.
Speaking of social media, when this issue came out, Dan Slott, who was the writer of Amazing Spider-Man at the time, was telling people, you need to read this book, like, now. And he was telling comic book store owners, you need to buy extra issues of this. Trust me. And, you know, some people did and some people didn't. You know, because they were going into Amazing Spider-Man 700. This was going to be the first part of a three-part story. So it's called Dying Wish. I'm just reading from Wikipedia here. It's a 2012 comic book storyline in Amazing Spider-Man published by Marvel Comics. The story began with a prologue in the Amazing Spider-Man 698 and ending with Amazing Spider-Man 700, the final issue of that series ending over 50 years of Marvel publication of the Amazing Spider-Man. The series was replaced with The Superior Spider-Man, which premiered January 2013. So why was it replaced? The story concluded a storyline started in Amazing Spider-Man number 600, which revealed that Spider-Man's villain, Dr. Octopus, is terminally ill from his years of crime and fighting superheroes. Aware of his impending death, Dr. Octopus sets in motion a plan that began with the March 2012 story, Ends of the Earth, and finished in Dying Wish. Now, to give you some perspective. So, I saw this on Twitter. Dan Slott said to pick up this book, so I figured, what the heck. I was kind of an on-again, off-again reader of Amazing Spider-Man at the time. And I'm reading this book, and it's, you know, basically Spider-Man going about his day, you know, stopping some robberies here, interacting with people there. But he's really off. He's acting very strange, you know. You know, the way he talks to Mary Jane is weird, you know, because at this point I think they're just friends and he's, like, hitting on her and stuff. And just the way he's acting is very strange until you get to the end of the issue. Because he receives word that Dr. Octopus, who's on the raft, I believe, the supervillain prison, he's told that Dr. Octopus is dying, and Dr. Octopus has requested that he come see him before he dies. So he goes to see Dr. Octopus, and Dr. Octopus is laid out on a table. He's all, you know, he's looks terrible. And then, in those final couple pages of issue 698, it's revealed that Dr. Octopus successfully swapped consciousnesses with Spider-Man. So Dr. Octopus is in Spider-Man's body and mind, and Peter Parker, the real Peter Parker, is trapped in the dying body of Dr. Octopus. So he's managed to switch minds, essentially. And then issue 700 comes, and the Dr. Octopus Spider-Man dies. Because it basically issue 699 is Peter Parker figuring out a way to basically bust out of this prison because he's got to get his body back, and then issue 700 he dies, and then Dr. Octopus kind of has an epiphany. You know, he realizes he's been given a second chance. He's got to be a good person. He has this, you know, these spider abilities now. He's got to be a better Spider-Man than Spider-Man was. He's got to be a superior Spider-Man. Thus, January 2013, the Superior Spider-Man launched with Dr. Octopus in the mind and body of Spider-Man. Which was a fun twist, but also very disheartening because, you know, Peter Parker was dead. But of course, with this being comic books, they found a backdoor way of bringing him back. And he takes over his mind again. But there was an issue, I want to say like issue 8 or 9 or 10 of Superior Spider-Man, where Dr. Octopus basically goes into the mind. Like, he senses that Peter Parker, there's still a part of him inside his mind. And he actually goes into his mind and, like, basically kills off what's left of Peter Parker. which he doesn't actually succeed in doing, because that's the backdoor way that he came back. But it's a very dark issue, and it was kind of a cool take and twist that I did not see coming. Like, when I bought that issue 698, I did not see that happening. And then when he died in issue 700, I was flabbergasted. And I really enjoyed the Superior Spider-Man. I read every issue. I think it went about 30 issues, and then Peter Parker came back, and then I think Dr. Octopus is in a clone body of Spider-Man now, I think. Yeah. I'm not entirely sure. But yeah, I did not see that one coming. And this is the good bad. Like, I mean, it was bad that Dr. Octopus was able to do this. You know, he was able to take over Peter's life. And it's kind of interesting the things he did. Like, you know, as Peter Parker, he actually got his doctorate in sciences and stuff and actually became Dr. Peter Parker. He started a company using his knowledge of all his gadgets and so on and so forth that he was able to make as Dr. Octopus. He can now make, for good purposes. It was such a neat twist and a neat take on the character that I did not see it coming. I was completely flabbergasted when it happened, and in a good way. So yeah, that's my number two, Amazing Spider-Man 698 going into 700, and then Superior Spider-Man, the Dr. Octopus switch.
I had completely forgotten about that, because I remember it being a big deal, and I was like, oh, I don't usually read, like, Spider-Man comics, like, let me pick this up and see what it's all about. And then mm-hmm. I just remember being like, oh my god, like, they're really doing something different here. Like, this is, like, you know, a very interesting concept of, you know, of a story that I wasn't expecting it to go in that way.
And it did have some ramifications for the character, like, because, I mean, after he came back, he kind of got exposed as a fraud, right? Because he got this doctorate, but they're saying that he cheated because it wasn't actually him doing it, it was Dr. Octopus, but he can't tell people, you know, that what happened, because he's trying to keep a secret identity, so he has to basically live with people thinking he cheated off Dr. Octopus, which mm-hmm. he didn't, but he can't tell anybody. And, like, one of the things he did as Superior Spider-Man is he came up with those, the tentacles, or whatever you want to call them, that we see in Avengers Infinity War and Endgame.
Yeah.
Like, as far as I can recall, I think that was the first time. Like, that was one of the first things Dr. Octopus did when he became the Superior Spider-Man, was basically update his suit where he has these mechanical arms, you know, kind of taking advantage of his previous experience as Dr. Octopus with his tentacles, but applying them to Spider-Man. But, Kev, do you have any thoughts on this one?
The funny thing is how it's viewed now, because when that came out, I mean, Dan Slott got death threats.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Like, he was, seemingly legit ones. You know, it was investigated, he was scared and all. And now that the story's concluded, people love it overall. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not cramped out like a Clone Saga always will be. But people are like, man, that was a fun ride. That was a good story. You know, this led to that. The story's all done. Peter Parker's back. You know, we're back to status quo. But man, that was a fun ride. I'm like, if I could look through your post from when this came out, you were insane. People crapping all over it.
Yeah, there was definitely a lot of people doing that. You loved it. Yeah, absolutely. People were definitely crapping on it. For me, like I said, prior to this, I was just the occasional Spider-Man reader. Like, you know, once in a blue moon, I'd check in. But when this hit, I mean, I stuck with it right till the end of Superior. Like, I even stuck with the relaunch of Amazing when Peter came back. And this is one of those that I really want to go back and get, like, the omnibus or, like, the collection. Just because
reread it in one sitting.
Yeah, because it's one of those that I want to have on my bookshelf, because I loved it that much.
But, well, and remember when Batman and Captain America were both dead, missing, whatever, around the same time.
Yep.
I remember an article, because it was making mainstream press. Like, even my dad went into a comic store where he is. He's like, oh, I wanted to buy it, but it was already sold out. They said it's going to be a fortune. I'm like, it's not. It's absolutely not. It's part of a story. Mm-hmm. And there was an article saying, if you took chapter 5 of a 30-chapter, you know, hundreds-of-page novel and stopped there and said, that's it. Whatever happens to these characters right now, that's it. Everyone would say, well, you're foolish. There's more book. It's like, we just publish, like, a chapter a month. So this is just what happens at the end of this chapter. Keep reading for the rest. You'll get the whole story. But because of the monthly, for the most part, nature of the comics are, there's so many people that are just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this happened. This is how it is. This is part of a longer story. Chill. Mm-hmm. Something else could happen. But people are like, hey, killed Peter Parker and it's Dr. Octopus in there. Yep. Is there an issue next month? Okay. Something more might happen. Story's not done yet. You know, yeah. And I mean, he did. Like, Dan Slott was on it for years. Or look at, like, Tom King, well, he was bumped off of it, but his initial plans for a 100-issue run on Batman. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes some of these writers have, look, Peter Diffin for Hulk. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes they have long plans that are going to take a while to pay off. Just enjoy the ride.
Yep. Yeah, and this was definitely, like, one of those, like I said with the Wikipedia, like, I mean, he's basically started building this up from issue 600. You know, he threw the building blocks, you know, occasionally here and there, leading up to it. But, anyone who thought that he wasn't coming back, I mean, come on, this is comic books. Like, Peter Parker's coming back. But, Kevin, number 2 on your list, sir.
All right, so speaking of comics and long-term planning and all... And again, this is going to be like a negative overall, but not for me, but for the world and the memory of it. And spoiler alert, again, is when Walking Dead killed Glenn.
In the comic, in the show?
In the show, because of how I think when they did it on the show, that's where they lost their audience. I think a lot of people are like, too far, I'm out.
Yeah, oh yeah.
In the comic, I remember I read tons of comics. I could tell you, like, about where I was. Like, oh, I think I was still in high school or, you know, I was in college. But I couldn't tell you exactly. I could tell you where I was when I read that issue of Walking Dead. It was issue 100. And I wanted to read it so bad because I knew something happened that I actually got it on my phone because I couldn't wait to read it. I couldn't wait to get a physical copy, so I went ahead and got it on my phone and was reading it at work.
Wow.
And I got to that scene. It was in July or August, and I, you know, super hot. And I got to that scene, and I went cold. I'm like, I can't believe they did this. And that huge, beautifully drawn but grotesque panel, I think it was a splash page of it, and I was like, I gotta put my phone away. And I did not look at my phone for like an hour. I'm like, okay, now I'm ready, continue. Like, I could not believe they were doing it. Mm-hmm. And Walking Dead hit me like that a couple times for a few things over the years. So when Negan shows up on show, I'm like, oh, this is coming. I know it's coming. But I've known lots of stuff is coming for the show. Because while they change things, the big beats are always the same. The prison, the governor, the farm. Yep. You know, like the big ones are always the same. So it's like, oh, someone's going to die. And I'm pretty sure I know who's going to die. And, you know, it's coming. But, jeez. You know, you're bringing up Hostel earlier. Which, Hostel is torture porn.
Yeah.
And, you know, hey, look at all these gross ways we can make people die in a movie. And you're like, alright, it's really gross. And it also, it's just gross. It's gross for gross, because I don't know who these people are. They're annoying teenagers or 20-year-olds or whatever.
Yep.
But because you spent years with Glenn, or any character in Walking Dead when they do their deaths right, in the comic or the show, you spent years and you've made a connection, you've built up your buddies, and you know who this person is, and oh my god, it hits so much harder, literally. But I know, like, we had people text us. I can't believe they did that. I can't believe. I'm like, yeah, I knew. Did this happen in comics? I'm like, yep. It was just as bad, too. And didn't have to hear it. Like, I had to for the show.
Right.
And my wife was like, I can't look. I can't. This is way too far. This is way too gross. And because you're so invested, it hurts even more to see it as opposed to, you know, random horror movie death. And she's like, I can't watch. So she covers her eyes. She's like, I can't even listen to it. It's so foul. I can't even hear it. She's like, I'm going to just leave the room. Tell me when this is done. And I think, and I mean, that was just in our house. I think worldwide, that's where their audience dropped. People are like, absolutely no, too far. I'm done.
Well, I do know someone I used to podcast with. I think that's where he checked out. Even though I told him, like,
I was listening to him earlier today.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. But I reminded him at the time. I'm like, but you read the comic. You knew it was coming. Like, because remember, just I want to say like a year prior to that, they had that fake out where.
Yeah.
It was like the mid-season finale, and him. There was that guy and him on that dumpster. And
that was good, too.
And they fell, and it looked like Glenn was getting eaten. And I was like, in a way, I was like, I kind of hope this is the end of Glenn, because I knew the Negan thing was coming. And if they went that route, I'm sure they were going to pull it off. And then when he showed back up, I was like, ugh. That's why they did that. They did that because they would, you know, people would not suspect Glenn's going to die at Negan's hands on the show. People who haven't read the comic book. But, it was pretty brutal. It was pretty brutal.
Yeah, it was pretty brutal. It was. And I think for some people, they thought, even though, like, this is what happens in the comics, like, this is a TV show, it can maybe be its own thing and maybe do something different. And I think when they went the direction that, you know, that the comic went also, I think it was a lot for people.
Well, the thing is, like, the show, like, they did do some switcheroos. Like, for example, is it Lori? Is that his wife's name? I can't remember.
I think
Maggie
so.
Is, Maggie
no, no, no.
Is Glenn's wife.
Rick's wife.
Lori's Rick's wife.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in the comic book, her and Judith die very brutally, right? The show, they were a little bit better about it. So I was kind of hoping they would go that route with Glenn, but unfortunately, I don't know. I think as the show progressed, they were allowed to show more brutality, and they just went for it, which is fitting on a show like Walking Dead, because it is a zombie apocalypse. It is a dystopian world that they're living in. It was definitely brutal. Like, I remember watching that with I was over at my friend's house when we watched that, and I looked away.
Yeah, it was hard to watch. And I think what also made it, I think for some people that maybe checked out, was because I think they were wanting Negan to get his comeuppance. Like, I think they had to wait so long for there to be any kind of a comeuppance that it was kind of like, what's, you know, like, this is, you know, I mean, you know, TV's different, you know, like, sometimes you can't stretch a payoff for very, you know, for super long, or you lose, you know, you might lose viewers, or you might lose interest, or, you know.
Well, the thing is, like, with that season, like, that was a pretty bad season, because Rick really got, like, neutered. Like, after that, like, he was not himself. And then seeing Daryl, like, because he was being held in captivity and being fed dog food and so on and so forth, like, it like, that show really sunk to a new low for the characters. And it was really hard to watch. Like, you know, like it was great when Rick snapped out of it and fought back. Like, I know everyone was cheering. But it took like pretty much a whole season to get there.
Yeah, it did.
The comic, you knew he had a plan. Like, hey, I'm going to pretend I'm bowing down, but in the background, I'm making a plan against him. You knew the whole time. But yeah, at the show, it just seemed like, oh, he's done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then the show, when, you know, you get to their contracts and everything, you really don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, excellent choice. All right, well, let's go once more around the table, and then for the topic, and then we'll move on to our next segment. So, Miss M, what's number three on your list?
So, this one, I went back and forth if I wanted to do this or not, but I felt like I had to because I don't know. So, it might be a little controversial because all in all, it was a really good season, but there's one thing that was a negative for me with Game of Thrones in the final season, which was when Daenerys kind of goes full on Mad Queen. And I knew, I mean, if you'd seen the show from the very beginning, you knew the hints, you knew that at some point there was going to be a moment where she was going to have to come face to face with her ancestry or her, like, you know, her family legacy of kind of like going mad and, you know, doing some bad stuff.
Yeah.
And so, like, it was almost kind of like, well, we're expecting it. Like, anybody who thinks that Daenerys is going to end up on the throne and it's going to have a happy ending, like, her, like, I always knew her story was going to be tragic. However, I had really had this, like, little sliver of hope that they were making it, like, they were building up to this, like, the Mad King, you know, that when faced with that moment, something tragic would still happen to her, but it wasn't going to be her, like, continuing that legacy, that family legacy. Like, I had wanted, just with everything she had been through from the beginning of the show, I just wanted there to be something just a little different and not as expected as her, like, kind of descending into madness and just, you know, doing what needed to be done in her mind. And I also had hoped that there was going to be, you know, throw a couple extra bucks and get Jason Momoa on for just one little scene where the two of them are like reunited in the flames or whatever, and some kind of, you know, write it in some way, because it's hard to, like, watching that show, I mean, it's rare to, like, find couples to kind of, like, root for, and I didn't even really root for them in the beginning, but as the those first seasons went on, it was kind of like, oh, well, you know, they do have this special thing, and I had kind of hoped that the show would, you know, do something with that, and so, like, that, the way that piece was all kind of handled was just kind of a negative for me, because it kind of checked me out, because everything leading up to that point was, like, so good. I mean, I was just like, oh my gosh, it's like there's all this stuff going on and it's so good. And even after she went full on Mad Queen, there were still a lot of great things that happened in that final season. I just had kind of, you know, I don't know, I just wanted to see something a little different than what happened.
I completely agree, Miss M. To be honest with you, like, it is what it is. Like, the, you know, they made the,
yeah,
the writers, showrunners made the choices they made for these characters. But I really, the Mad Queen thing, like, on one hand, like, when it happened, I was like, oh, she snapped. You know, like the Targaryen madness, I knew could be there for her. And we've seen her snap occasionally, but not,
yeah,
to that extent, obviously.
Yeah.
But to me, it kind of felt like it kind of came out of nowhere. Like, I mean, a lot of bad things did happen to her recently. Like, she lost Jorah, she lost Missandei. You know, obviously, Grey Worm, you know, was done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's probably advising her, you know, some pretty dark things. But to me, yeah, it just seemed to, there wasn't enough buildup.
Yeah.
You know, like if we had seen a few more glimpses into this darkness, you know, in previous seasons, I might have bought into it a little bit more.
Yeah.
But, you know, to me, it was like, I still remember Daenerys, like, I think it was the season 3 finale, when they freed the slaves in Slaver's Bay, and all them slaves come out, and they lift her up, and they're calling her mother, and uh-huh. and then they do the aerial shot, and that's how the season ends. So she goes from freeing people and caring about people to murdering them, you know, in one of the most terrible ways you can kill a person, by burning them to death. Like,
yeah.
Like, I didn't buy into it. I really didn't. And, you know, we've talked about this before. Like, I mean, the showrunners, you know, it's their show. They can do what they want. But I really, I don't know. And I know it would have been too fan servicey, but I really wanted it to end with, you know, like, even if she died at the end, I would have been okay, as long as she died a hero, you know, fighting the Night King or something. You know,
yeah.
Like, but to have her become the villain, you know, on the second last episode, you
yeah.
know, like, it just, I don't know.
You're fine. I was kind of hoping, like, okay, so because of all these, like, traumatic things that of these people she had just recently lost,
yeah,
she was going to slip up and become vulnerable, and something bad was going to happen, and then the dragon was going to mess some stuff up. You know what I mean? Like, I was thinking that, you know, because going back to that first season, she was sold off. I mean, she was raped before, you know, like, mm-hmm. I mean, there were all these, like, horrible things that happened to her. And, you know, when you invest that much time with the character, I mean, I know they can't always have a happy ending, but I just felt like everything she brought to that show, I don't know, like, I felt like they could have just done something a little different than what was sort of this, like, drilled into us that she comes from a family where, you know, like, you lose your mind and become this mad ruler, you know? And I just mm-hmm. wanted, you know, I just wanted something just a slight bit different, you know?
Well,
but the rest of the season was still good. Like,
even, oh, yeah.
You know, it was a good season.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it should have been better. But, you know, yeah, I really did not like what they did with Daenerys, or really what they did with all the characters. Like, Jon going up. Anyway. This could be a whole episode. Yeah. This could be a whole episode.
Yeah, it could be a whole episode.
but Kev, did you have anything to add?
I mean, I think we all wanted a showrunners that knew what they were doing and cared. And every single interview after sounds like they just fumbled their way through the entire time. And it finally caught up with them with this last season.
Yeah.
And it's and there's so much that is just, like, one good edit away. Like, just one more pass. Or one more person saying, you know, what if I said this instead of that? Like, it's overall easy fixes. Yeah. It's like, you just need, you know, one more scene, one more line, 5 more minutes over here to just build something up a little more. And it's HBO. It's not like you got confined to, you know, network one yeah. hours, you know, with commercials. Oh, hey, we need 5 more minutes to have this scene happen, and you get this person from here to here. Okay, go ahead. We're HBO, do it.
Yeah.
But they just failed spectacularly in the last bit.
Yeah.
Well, and from what I heard, they, like, really, you know, excluded George R. R. Martin, like, in the last few years. Like, he really was not there with them creatively, and when they got past the books, you can totally see the difference, the tonal yeah. shift in the show.
They didn't have a clue what to do without the books.
Yeah
and I think George told him his plan and they didn't like it. It wasn't the way they wanted to go. So from what I understand from the cryptic things that George R. R. Martin has said in certain interviews and so on and so forth, his last two books are going to be way different than what we saw on the show. Hopefully for the better. But the one thing I just want to throw in there real quick. Despite me not liking what they did with Danny, I really appreciate, blanking on her name, the actress, Emilia Clarke. She did a bang-up job for what she had to work with. Like, mm-hmm. The look on her face, like when she is about to torch King's Landing, like you could see mm-hmm. You could see it literally on that actress's face when she snapped. When she was like, I'm doing it. And kudos to her. Like, she did an amazing job with what she had to work with. But I know there's that documentary that they released, I think it was like a week after the finale, where they showed all the behind-the-scenes stuff for the final season. And the table reading. Because she had read the script before they did their table reading, right? So the whole cast is at the table, they're reading this. And Kit Harington, when he finds out that he stabs her, and he's like, oh my God, and he looks over across the table at her, and you see the look on her face, like, you could tell she's not happy. But she's like, yeah, they went there. And in an interview, like, I know I've seen her on, like, the red carpet of the premiere or whatever, she was being interviewed, and one of the interviewers asked her, you know, so was this a great season? And she's like, she kind of smiles, and she's like, it was a season, you know, and that's kind of where she left it. Like, you could tell she was not happy with what happened.
Well, and I think I'd also read an article where they interviewed her, and when she read the script, she called her mom or dad and was like, she was crying because she was like, oh my God, like, mm-hmm. they're going to hate me. The audience is going to hate me for what I'm going to be doing in this final season. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I didn't walk away hating her. I walked away feeling like you have this great talent and this wonderful character that you've been building for so many seasons. I just wanted a little bit more than that really, like, you know, like, to me, it was just a, like, let's just make her mad and crazy. And, like, you know, I mean, it was just kind of like, you know, I just wanted a little bit more for that, you know, because she was such a very iconic character, not just in that series, but I think in pop culture. I mean, she's a tremendously huge, you know, well, right now, at least. I don't know if, I mean, I'm sure 10 years from now, we'll still be thinking about Game of Thrones, but, you know.
Well, and the fact that it seemed to come out of nowhere, really, because, I mean, yes, there were hints, and yes, you know, there were things she did, but one of the MacGuffins of this series is her dad, the Mad King, and he did all these terrible things. He, you know, like, he, well, it was Rhaegar that stole Lyanna and started the war or whatever, but it was the Mad King that really fueled it and really got it going. But even he didn't burn down King's Landing. Like, yes, he told his pyromancers, he was, you know, and he was preparing to do it, but he never actually did it. Like, he got killed before that happened. So they actually made her worse than her dad.
Yeah.
Which I really don't think, because the Mad King, like, it was, like, you know, reading the backstory and so on and so forth, like, it was a descent into madness that went for decades. Like, it built up a lot over time till he was, you know, 50 or 60 years old when he finally, you know, was at the end of his life, right? Whereas with her, I mean, she's like, in the snap of a finger, she changed.
Yeah.
And it, to me, it just wasn't earned. Like, it really wasn't.
Yeah.
But anyway, okay, excellent one, Miss M. Number three on my list, and I'm just going to say this real quick. Actually, I have a funny story associated with this. I've mentioned this before, I'm sure, on this podcast, and that's Dexter, season 4 finale, when Rita dies. He finds Rita dead in the bathtub. That shook me. I remember watching that episode. I had to work the next day. I had a hard time sleeping. Like, I love that actress, Julie Benz. You know, Rita was such a sweet character, such a good mother, and a good wife to Dexter. And to see her get killed by John Lithgow's character, as it turns out, it was rough. It shocked me. It was a bad thing that happened, but like I said, it like that finale really shook me to my core. So the funny thing is, there's this one. This was a few years ago. I was podcasting. I can't remember if it was Geek Fallout or Random Nerdness. So I'm podcasting. It was me and Chris Gaeta, and we had I can't remember her name. She was on the Nerd Lunch podcast. I'm drawing a blank. But I had no, like, we were doing a similar topic, like, I think shocking moments in television or something like that. And I brought this up, not knowing she was at that moment binge watching the series and was only in season 3.
Oh no. Oh no.
And yeah, she was like, so upset with me. And she's like, "You're joking, right?" I'm like, "No." And I mean, this was like a year or two after this had happened. So it wasn't like, you know, it just happened and I was talking about it. It had been a year or two. But I had no idea she was binge watching Dexter. She didn't say anything when I began talking. Like, she should have said, "Hey, you know."
She should have set it down, yeah.
Yeah, if there's a spoiler, I need to check out. I'm only, you know, but she said nothing until I said it. And, yeah, she was pretty upset with me. But it was kind of funny. I know Chris was laughing. But, you know, it was shortly after she, like, this the character Rita died, I seen her at a convention, Julie Benz, and I shared the story with her about how, like, I couldn't sleep that night. It really bothered me. And she was very sweet and kind. She's like, "Oh, you know, that's so sweet." And you know, she signed my autograph and stuff. But, you know, I don't know what the behind the scenes things story was, why she got wrote out of the show. I don't think she wanted to be. And I, from what I understand, in the book series, Rita's still alive. So it was something that they did on the show.
Oh.
It wasn't something that happened in the books. But yeah, so that it was bad, but in a way it was good, because it made for good podcasting. It made for a good story to share with the actress. And it's one of those rare moments where a TV show really makes me, you know, really, it really disturbed me. But, all right, Kevin, number 3 on your list, sir.
All right, so we kind of briefly mentioned it last episode, and just in case there's listeners that are expecting it, I'm going to say the whole experience of Sucker Punch.
Oh, yeah.
So the trailers come out, and I know my wife and I and so many people are like, "What is this? This looks amazing. It's just beautifully shot. The effects look cool. It looks like some woman empowerment story. I don't understand how all these locales and outfits and everything are going to fit in one movie. I'm curious to see. This looks amazing." And it was really like an anime come to life in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's Zack Snyder. All right, he's done some cool stuff and all. Let's go into it. And then you watch it, and here's this asylum, institution, hospital, whatever it's supposed to be, where the girls there are put away to die pretty much and be forgotten about and abused and raped and everything else. And they're trying to escape. And it's like, okay, bad stuff has to happen so we can have the good thing happen. All right, that's fine. And then you find out that all these incredible sequences is a fantasy of what they're doing. So it's not just like, okay, we gotta sneak the key from the guard. It's like, and I only saw the movie the one time. But it's, you know, we got to sneak the key away and now it's on a train or in space or a dragon or whatever the hell. Okay, cool. And that nothing works and nothing happens and the girls are still shit on by the end. And what should have been this amazing, beautiful, female empowerment, yay, film, is just like, yeah, girls are dumb and bad stuff happens.
Yeah.
And just crapped all over them. And we're looking at each other like, did the movie actually end like that? Like, is our disc broken? Is there a post-credit scene before post-credit scenes were the thing? Like, is there something I'm missing here? Did we get an unfinished movie? A Snyder cut, if you will? What the hell is happening here? And my wife looks over, she's like, movie pretty. And she's right. It looked amazing.
Yeah.
But there is nothing there. And it could have been something special. If that movie lived up to what the trailer was, what we all thought it was going to be, it would have been a franchise now.
Yeah.
It could have been something beautiful and amazing, and instead it's like, wow, what I thought was going to be in front of me is actually like, are you a misogynist?
Yeah.
You know, making this movie? Who pissed you off? What girl dumped you in high school? Like, why... It's almost like, oh, I'm going to purposely raise you up just so I can drop you even higher.
Yeah. And I... Just, oh, no, I'm sorry.
So disappointing.
Kevin. Yeah. I loathe that movie with every fiber of my being. Like, I can't begin... I don't even know where to start with how much I loathe that movie. I was married at the time, and I was not in a good place in my marriage. And it was just not my finest hour. And we went to the theater to see it. And I'm walking in thinking, like, I really need this movie to be like a kick-ass woman empowerment movie, because like I'm like at the low, like I'm just in a low place right now. And I'm watching it and I'm like, oh, this is not at all, like, this is not at all what I thought it was gonna be.
No.
And then when you get to the end, and the whole lobotomy thing, and I'm just like, oh my god, like, I feel like shit right now. Like, I feel horrible. And I'm like, that's not the experience I want to have when I go to the movies. And I think, like, reading his, like, reasoning for this movie, which is about, like, the toxic nature of how women are treated in, like, geek culture, and how it doesn't have a happy ending because women are just never treated right in geek culture. I'm just like, that's the message you want to impart, like, in pop culture. Like, that's what you want to share with the world. That's your, I mean, that's a horrible viewpoint to have, that, like, well, women are just treated badly, and that's just how it's going to always be. So no matter what you do, you're still going to be, like, objectified and treated like trash. Like, that's a horrible take. Like, mm-hmm. That's not what movies should be about. Like, I don't need a movie to reflect how bad things can be in the world. Like, we already live in a crazy world. Like, if I'm going to see some movie, like, I want to be empowered. I want to feel like, you know, like, I just want to feel something way more than what I felt when I watched that movie. Like,
any geek girl I know that saw it is like, I felt like I was abused coming out of it.
Yeah. Oh, horrible. Like, I felt like I just felt like horrible. Like, it was an awful experience in the movie theater. Like, I just, it was not.
Weren't there, like, pretty cool toys or dolls or statues, like, right before it came out, too? I remember the posters were everywhere.
The posters were everywhere. I don't remember if there was a toy line or not.
I do know when it was released on Blu-ray, they come up with this really awesome Blu-ray set, which I actually purchased. And I actually, you know, honestly, because of all the bad buzz, all you know, the people I knew that saw that movie, I never actually watched it. It's actually just the other, like, the other week I downsized my DVD and Blu-ray collection. What I did was I bought those CD books to put the movies in, so I can get rid of all the cases and stuff. And I actually got rid of that case, that metal case, like, it, because I don't want it on my shelf, you know. Like, I didn't throw out the DVDs because, you know, or Blu-rays I should say, because maybe one day, you know, my son or somebody might want to watch it. That's why I keep all my, my Blu-rays and DVDs in those books. But the ones that are nearest and dearest to my heart, I keep in the cases. And that one, it, even though the case was awesome and it, it looked really nice, it's like, yeah, it, that movie's crap. And I'm probably never going to actually sit down to watch it.
Yeah, you're not missing anything.
No, that's the big one. I mean, we all write stuff. A lot of people listen to the show write stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of those ones where I'm like, God, if I ever had the opportunity to take the essence of something and make it better, that's a huge one.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's some, like, and that's what upsets people the most about it is there was something here.
Mm-hmm.
There was something here that just fell apart for many reasons, but there's still something here. And I feel like if, you know, a better talent, and it's crazy to say a better talent considering who it was, but in this situation, yes, a better talent could have really made something for it and made it a franchise and made it an icon and made it something that women are like, I remember where I was the moment I saw that movie and it changed my life. And it could have been.
Yeah,
well, yeah.
Because the talent, the.
Oh, go ahead, Miss M.
Chris, I'm sorry.
No, you.
Well, I was going to say the acting was. I mean, the actresses that they had, they were all wonderful. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they were all like, it was a great cast, but it was just the writing and the whole. I mean, it just wasn't. It wasn't good.
Well, the like you said, Kev, this was really an opportunity for them to create a new franchise, like something fresh, something that, you know, isn't you know, a regurgitation of something that's happened before, like, but, you know,
I thought it was how about from trailers, I thought it was gonna be Girl Matrix.
I thought
it was gonna be that level of it's gonna change the game and it's gonna be seen as a benchmark of it, here's where stuff changed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but it's all women stars and nope.
Yeah.
I have seen a few scenes like on YouTube and stuff, but I've watching the movie from beginning to end, I've never actually done. But yeah, the stuff I seen was cool, but knowing how it ends, it's like, it totally makes it stupid now. But
yeah.
Anyway, good choice, Kev. All right. Well, let us move on to our newest segment, and that is called Brain Candy. For Brain Candy, what this is I'm going to go around the table and ask each of us to say, to talk about one thing that you've been watching or reading. You don't have to make it a pick or pan. Just say what you want about it. I'll kick it off. I recently watched Joker, the DC movie with Joaquin Phoenix and so on and so forth, Robert De Niro. Honestly, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. I actually didn't mind it. My wife and my kids actually watched it before I did, and my wife absolutely hated it. She thought it was stupid. and I've heard other people say that as well. But I've also heard people say the complete opposite, that it was the, you know, film of the year, the best comic book movie of 2019. I do not agree with that sentiment. It is Avengers Endgame for me, 100%. But Joker, it actually wasn't that bad, and Joaquin Phoenix actually was pretty good. I mean, this, do I consider this the definitive Joker story? Absolutely not. This is a Joker story. Like, this is not the Joker, you know, that, if I'm thinking of a Joker origin, this is not what I would have made. But it is a good movie, and he did do a good job in that role. Miss M and Kev, have you guys seen Joker at all?
Yeah, I saw it.
I was so against it when it was coming out. I just haven't gotten around to it yet. And I've heard from people like you, you know, other bloggers and all that I trust, that could, because my main concern was it was glorifying it.
Mm-hmm.
and I didn't want certain people in the world taking this movie as their excuse for certain actions.
Which and, they could totally could have. Really, yeah. Like in this the way this movie was written, especially the ending, they totally glorified the Joker. Like it was actually kind of freaky to see that.
But now that I know how the movie landed and what effect it has and hasn't had, I'm like, okay, my concerns didn't happen, thankfully. Now mm-hmm. I can watch it as its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll get there eventually. It's just not priority.
Well, honestly, the only reason I watched it is because someone else was watching it and I was able to watch it for free. Like, I would never have paid for this movie. But Miss M, you didn't mind it, or?
I mean, it was okay. Like, I don't know. I think I'm, like, at a point in life where I've seen so many, like, movies or stories with, like, Batman and Joker that, like, I don't know that I need to see any more, like, Batman and Joker mm-hmm. movies right now. Like,
yeah.
I'm more interested in, like, seeing something new and different. But, I mean, I think his acting was, like, I thought he did a really incredible job acting. I was a little concerned that the way that it was set up, that people would not get the message in the movie and kind of, like, the takeaway be, oh, well, let's just, you know, like, life is hard. Let's go make some bad choices about some things that we can't control for whatever reason. And, you know, I think that it opened up a wider discussion about stuff that I'm glad that people, you know, were having a conversation about mental illness and things like that. But is it like my definitive Joker origin movie? I mean, no, it would not be. You know, I think that the movie benefited really well by calling it, you know, by him being the Joker, you know. Mm-hmm. Had it just been a movie about, you know, a regular guy who did not become, you know, a DC supervillain or whatever, I don't know that, like, there would be a huge conversation about it. You know what I mean? But it wasn't a bad movie. Like, I saw it, I'm good. I don't know that I'll see it again anytime soon, but, I mean, it wasn't torture to watch.
Yeah.
It wasn't Sucker Punch.
No. I'm just going to quickly throw this out there. I did watch the first episode of Hunters. That's the Amazon Prime series with Al Pacino. It was good. I really liked the first episode. I'm looking forward to watching the rest of the series. But I'll talk about that more in a future episode. Miss M, do you have anything for Brain Candy?
So, you know, my love is soap operas, and I recently started picking up General Hospital again, which is nice. I mean, I watch a lot of stuff, but this is one that I think is, like, the latest, like, new thing that I'm watching, and it's fun to revisit, you know, familiar faces that never seem to age, and it's actually quite funny, because when I stopped watching back in, like, it was like 2018. I stopped watching. They were just starting like a baby swap storyline. And I finally picked back up the week of like the baby swap storyline coming to a head, which was probably like a week or two ago. So it was nice to like get the whole payoff without having to have watched it for, you know, 2 years or whatever, because that's a long time. That's a long time, and a lot of other stuff has come out since then, so I don't know that I would have kept up with it the way, you know, so it was nice to kind of get that payoff, and it was good, you know, it reminded me of why I enjoy watching soap operas and love that as like a meet, you know, as a way of telling a story, but I've kind of revisited General Hospital. I don't know how long this visit will be, but I'm enjoying it for now.
Excellent. Kevin, what do you have for Brain Candy?
Okay. So, last two or three weeks, I've been slowly making my way through some brand new documentaries out of all things the WWE Network. Now, in addition to having like every WrestleMania and Raw and stuff like that on there, they do in-depth interviews and documentaries completely in-house now. And it's character gone, just the real guy or girl, talking about whatever the topic is, someone's career, a match, an event, something. And it's fascinating. It's almost, in some ways, it's almost like a, on my mind because he died today, but it's almost like a Inside the Actor's Studio.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Like, yeah. Let me go into your craft here. So one of them is Steve Austin once a month has a sit-down interview about 2 hours long with someone. And so he sat down with the Big Show, who has wrestled for, my gosh, 25 years now, maybe? Mostly retired, shows up, you know, once in a while now just to, you know, be a surprise. Man is over 7 feet. Probably walks around at like 350, 400 and has to, you know, has to work to be that small. And he's talking about how he didn't know what he was doing. He didn't, he's flopping around like a guy 150 pounds because he didn't know any better.
Oh, wow.
He thought he was a failure in life. He was in, this is the era of the Monday Night Wars, Raw and Nitro at the same time. He's a kid, early 20s, in WCW. He's never wrestled before in his life. He's just a big dude that they signed, and they said, okay, your first match, you're going to go out there and beat Hulk Hogan for the world title.
Huh.
It's his first match of his life. Wow. He does that. So then he realizes, I want to do something more with my life. I want to do something more with my career. WWE offers some more money. He shows up and they go, oh, wait, no one's ever trained you. Now we have this giant we're paying millions of dollars to who's already been a multi-time champion and he's never been trained. So they have to send this guy to their minor league training facility. And they're like, okay, go set up the ring. He goes, what do you mean go set up the ring? I've beat Hulk Hogan for title. I've been around the world. They're like, yeah, you haven't done shit yet. You don't know what you're doing. Go build the ring. Like, it was just fascinating to see this humble giant of a man. And then they also have, they got multi-series right now. It's called Ruthless Aggression. To every, say 10 years or so in wrestling is an era. So you had like the Hulk Hogan era and the Stone Cold era.
Mm-hmm.
So when Stone Cold, Rock, all those people start leaving, there's this big empty space of, okay, we don't have a star anymore. And we've gone too far in our college, you know, PG-13 borderline R-rated programming. We need to get the kids back and move the dial back over. And that's the era that kind of just ended. That's when John Cena became a star and a mm-hmm. role model to children and all that. So they're going through that 10 years of how stuff happened and how stuff lined up and where things got placed the way they were. But everyone's being like real open and honest. And the crazy thing is seeing stuff where they're like, hey, here's this footage no one's ever seen before. This thing that went this way, we actually filmed it this way first, but then this guy got injured, or this guy messed up, or this guy, you know, whatever may have happened, and we had to change course. So Batista, for example, who is Drax in the Guardians movies,
mm-hmm.
was seen as no future in him. He's just a big guy. He'll never be a star. So this group that he was supposed to be in, he got injured, he was home, they filmed someone else in there. They're like, all right, if you don't heal quickly, you're out of spot. We'll probably end up firing you because we don't see anything in you. And by the way, we've already filmed someone taking your place. So all of this has been like buried in their archives. Obviously, Batista came back, became a huge star, and is now a movie star as well. So he did all right for himself.
Yeah.
But it's really like, you know, the secret's out. We all know it's a show and scripted, but still very private, too. Still a very insulated world. And for any time they open the doors and kind of show like how it's made, it's always really cool.
So was that group, was that Evolution?
Yes, it was.
Okay. Yeah, that's when I was watching. Because that was Ric Flair, Triple H, and then it was Randy Orton, right, that took over Batista's spot?
No, it was... So Triple H wanted his own Four Horsemen. That's what it was. Ric Flair was dealing with serious depression because he didn't feel like he was Ric Flair anymore.
Oh, okay.
He felt like he was a joke. So Triple H brings him on as like a manager and just going with him and hanging out, and he starts coming back.
Yeah.
And then they got the idea, what if we did like a Four Horsemen and took two young guys and just groomed them? So it was Randy Orton Batista. Randy Orton Batista got injured in the same match. They're out.
Okay.
Batista rips his tricep off the bone, and Orton shattered his ankle in the same match. Gosh. So Orton came back quicker. Batista was like, well, Orton's back. I got to get back too. So he starts training harder. He wants to look great for his comeback. He rips the tricep right off again.
Oh.
He hasn't let it heal. So now they're done. So they take this guy who, big guy, great look for him, young guy, handsome, you know, jacked. This guy named Mark Jindrak that they brought over from WCW that Randy was best friends with in real life. They bring him over, put him in a suit, sunglasses, film him with Evolution and the cars and the girls and everything. But him, we all have a friend that we act differently around than we act around other people. So apparently when him and Orton were together, they would act like two, like, dumb high school kids and just really be immature. But if Orton was around Batista, he would be mature, trying to hang, because Batista's older, and sit under the learning tree that is Triple H and Ric Flair. Whereas when he's with this other guy, they're acting like rotten little kids. So apparently Triple H, Ric Flair, and Randy Orton and this other guy had a road trip from, you know, show to show. Triple H gets out, immediately goes Vince McMahon, says, get him out. I never want to ride with him again. He's not allowed to ride with any of us again, and he will not be part of this group. You are that close to being a star, and you screw it up on a car trip.
Wow.
Was he bald, that guy?
Jindrak, no.
Okay, I'm thinking of a different guy then. Because there was some guy that was training with The Undertaker, and then he was supposed to wrestle with him in WrestleMania, and then he was just, like, gone. And then the next time
Nathan
I...
Nathan Jones.
Yes, that's... Yeah. Because the next time I seen him was in Gangs of New York, I think.
Yep. Because he's a big dude, so he went... But he couldn't wrestle worth a shit. But he was a big dude from, like, Australia or New Zealand, I forget which. And, it was supposed to be him and Undertaker against Big Show and Mark Henry, I think.
Wasn't it A-Train? Big Show and A-Train?
A-Train. Big Show and A-Train. Yes, you're correct. I mean, all four just giant human beings. So they start going over it, because it's a WrestleMania match, so you practice some stuff, and you plan out your spots. No, like, I went to a show yesterday. I'll guarantee they just called that in the ring. They're like, all right, we'll see you in the ring, we'll do this, we'll do that. You know, you'll win, we'll go home.
Yeah.
WrestleMania, you plan ahead, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'll guarantee they were out there and realized, this guy can't work. We got to figure something out now. So they did, like, an injury angle right beforehand, had Undertaker come out and do a two-on-one match, and that guy was never seen again.
Yeah, because supposedly, like, A-Train or something, like, they hurt him, like, behind the scenes or something. And then, yeah, he couldn't make it for the match. And, of course, Undertaker wins, because he was undefeated.
He was undefeated at that time still. And A-Train's actually the head trainer of NXT right now.
Oh, cool. Awesome. See, I already like this segment because, you know, I don't watch wrestling, but yet I'm able to talk about wrestling, and I don't watch American soap operas anymore. I used to watch In on the Restless back in the day when I was dating my wife, and we watched it actually for the first couple of years we were married. But now I watch Coronation Street, so I watch a British soap. But yeah.
Yeah.
this segment brought out wrestling. It brought out soap operas. It's awesome.
They're both soap operas.
Oh yeah.
And I was about to say, like, I like wrestling too. I know that I haven't watched it in a while, but I used to watch it pretty heavily.
No, but you got the best wrestling figures that I can't find anywhere around here.
Yes, I do love to still collect the wrestling figures.
Awesome. I saw a Sherry Martel figure yesterday. It was $65 in the box still. Like, nope.
Yeah, I do like that they made, I think there's like two versions of her, and I'm very glad that they exist.
That was Macho Man's girlfriend?
Well, when he was a heel, a bad guy, he had Scary Sherry, Sensational Sherry, Queen Sherry, whatever, depending on where the gimmick was.
Yeah.
And then she's the one that attacked him when he lost his retirement match at WrestleMania against Warrior, and Miss Elizabeth made her return and took her out, and then they got married on TV in the summer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The good old days.
Yes.
All right. Well, I think we can move on to our Enders segment. So, for Enders, why don't I go, before I get into my Picard, because since we last recorded, episodes 4, 5, and 6 of Picard have come out. The last episode we recorded, I reviewed 2 and 3, so I got 4, 5, and 6 to quickly go through. But Miss M, did you have anything that you wanted to discuss in Enders?
I don't really think so. I'm behind on a lot of stuff, so I've got catching up to do.
Oh, that's not a problem.
A lot of things.
Kev, do you have anything for Enders?
I am horribly behind on everything. I did finally watch Jane's Silent Bob reboot.
Did you like it?
Thankfully, I loved it.
Excellent.
Still processing some feelings, and there's a segment towards the end that I want to rewatch that character's speech again, especially.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot in there. So I'm not quite done processing it yet.
Yeah, I hear you. Like, it's been like a 2.5 weeks since I've seen it. I got to rewatch it again because I know I missed some stuff.
Because there's jokes, funny, and then being a dad hits you real hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, this is not where I thought the movie was going.
So, the character of Jason Mewes' daughter is played by Kevin Smith's daughter, Harley Quinn, right?
Yes.
But is it just me, or does she actually look like she could be Jason Mewes' daughter?
She looks so much like him.
Yeah, like, I remember thinking that. I was like, you know, like, I know that's Kevin Smith's daughter, but maybe that, you know, she was artificially inseminated or something with Jason Mewes'?
Well,
because, wow, does she look like him.
But then you have to realize how much Jennifer Schwabach, his wife, has similar features to Jason Mewes.
That is true. That is true.
And then it makes a lot more sense. It's like, okay, mm-hmm. Well, I can see Kevin Smith in there. I can see his wife in there, too.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the way she looked as a kid, because she and Jane Silent Bob Strike Back, when the two little toddlers are left by themselves in front of the Quick Stop, and they start swearing.
Yep.
In their strollers. That was Harley Quinn as well.
Yep.
As, you know, a chubby little baby.
Yep.
I'm like, well, she looked more like her dad then. Chubby little baby.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, how many kids, whether they're our own or related to, or just, you know, a friend's kid or whatever, looks like one parent from this age to this age, and then it's like a switch and they look like the other parent.
Mm-hmm.
It happens all the time. My kid, the crazy thing was when he was younger, if you covered half of his face, he would look like one of us, and then move your hand, he looked like the other. It was like one of those like little like Monster Maker flip things. Like, yeah. let me make a new creation here. So yeah, I mean, and she's what, like 18, 19 now, yep. Anyways.
Yep.
Like, she's not done. You know, her face isn't done yet. It's probably still going to change more, but she's actually really good. She's in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood as well.
Yes, she was. Yep.
Yeah.
But she has all the potential to be a star. Who knows? But all the potential's there. If anything, I think she'll get like a good sitcom deal. They'll, you know, be in syndication and she'll be known for it.
That would be cool. Yeah, it is nice to see these good, successful Hollywood stories, like where, you know, the children are brought up and do good things. So, you know, I hope the best for her, for sure.
Who's the Disney one I just saw this week? Amanda Bynes, I think, that is a mess again.
Oh? I didn't see that.
I was in something. She was the one that, like 2 years ago, was the one that was, like, tweeting at Drake and all that stuff. And then it turned out she had severe mental issues, so everyone kind of stopped and let her go through rehab and heal. And then she came back out, and it turns out she's still messing up. Like, Lindsay Lohan's a huge one, too. I don't know. I think there's something with being a Disney princess that just messes you up later in life.
Yeah. Unfortunately, but all right. Well, I'll move on to discussing episodes 4, 5, and 6 of Picard. Episode 4, we were introduced to the Romulan character of, I want to say Elrond, or what's his name? Not Elrond. Elrond's from Lord of the Rings, right? Lord Elrond, I want to say.
Oh. Or Dianetics.
I can't remember the character's name. Basically, he looks like an elf because he's Romulan. He's got long hair and it's braided and so on and so forth. But he's but he was trained by Romulan female Romulan ninja warriors, essentially. So this guy is carrying swords. He's kicking ass. Picard needs a bodyguard, so he looks up this. I'm not making this up. There's this group of female warrior nuns that are enemies of the Tal Shiar, and they train this young boy in the ways of their order. But now he's a young man, and Picard. Basically, that episode is Picard getting him to join him on his quest. And then, of course, episode 5 was the 7 of 9 episode that I described, where you had the torture scene. Episode 6 got a little bit better, because that's when things are starting to happen now. Like, Picard and his crew make it to the Borg cube. You know, the Tal Shiar's on the chase for them, because Picard is going after Soji, I want to say her name is. The other daughter of Data, using air quotes, and it was, and we got Hugh in that episode. I think Hugh was also in episode 4 as well, or no, maybe it was episode 3. But anyway, you get Hugh in that episode, and it was great. It was pretty good. That being said, like I mentioned in our topic, you know, the torture scene from episode 5 really, I did not like it. It really bothered me. So I wrote this down. This is kind of a statement that I came up with. Star Trek was a show about grand ideas and a hope for a positive vision of the future. A future where humanity had outgrown all its failings and weaknesses and became a better species. But now in modern Trek, murder and the casual disrespect for life is commonplace, and humanity it seems, has devolved into something dark and sad. And there is a YouTuber, I can't remember which one it is, but he's actually keeping a tally. On every episode of Star Trek Picard so far, and there's been 6 episodes, there's been a murder in every episode. So much death that I believe the body count is in the 30s by episode 6. So by murders, I'm talking about, you know, it could be Tal Shiar officers being shot. In episode 4, you saw a former Romulan senator literally get beheaded by the elf Romulan bodyguard character. There's a Romulan senator that challenges Picard to a sword fight. And Picard, of course, throws the sword away, which I did not understand why he did that, because he, you know, Picard is a skilled fenceman. So instead of Picard getting killed by this guy gets his head cut off by Elnor. Elnor, I want to say his name is. And then, yeah, the just people getting shot. You know, like I said, 7 of 9 mercy killing that character from Star Trek Voyager. Like, literally every episode, someone is killed. I don't remember a Star Trek series. And, I like I said, I haven't watched all of Voyager. I've kind of dropped off almost just past the midway point of Star Trek Discovery Season 2. I kind of gave up on it. I know a lot of people get murdered on that show as well. And it just... It kind of makes me sad. Like, I mean, I really want to like Picard. I do. And I'm not hating on it. I don't hate this show. I kind of like some of the creative choices they've made. Is this... Like, when this was announced, you know, almost 2 years ago at Comic-Con, was this the Picard series I thought I was going to get? No. Definitely not. I didn't think they were going to go this direction with Picard. But some of the choices they've made, I can understand. And it kind of makes sense from a character standpoint. So it makes sense that Admiral Picard, you know, would leave the Enterprise to command a rescue armada. It would make sense that Admiral Picard would resign from Starfleet in protest, because Picard literally has done that. In the movie Star Trek Insurrection, he did it. You know, he defied Starfleet's orders and went rogue. But, you know, unfortunately, there's enough dystopian science fiction out there. Like, there's enough, you know, kill, death, so on and so forth. I don't need this in Star Trek. I don't need to see someone being murdered every episode of a series. Like, we're 6 episodes in. Every episode, there's at least one person getting killed. And like I said, the body count's up to 30 at this point. Past 30. From what I understand, I don't have the exact number, but that's what I saw anyway. Star Trek's supposed to be positive vision of the future, not a dystopian future. And unfortunately, you know, this kind of falls into the category of be careful what you wish for, because you might get it. And I'm pointing at myself here, because I'm guilty of this as well. You know, 10 years ago, I remember, you know, being on a science fiction forum, and we were, you know, discussing, you know, different ideas for shows we'd want to see and so forth, so on and so forth. And one of the shows that I proposed they should bring back is I wanted them to do a Star Trek The Next Generation miniseries on HBO. And the reason I gave at the time was, you know, there's a bunch of plot threads from Star Trek The Next Generation that went unresolved. You know, like what happened to B4 at the end of Star Trek Nemesis? You know, did Data come back? You know, what happened when Riker and Troy left to the Titan? You know, like, you know, was it a success? Did Worf stay on the Enterprise? You know, what happened to Worf's brother from Deep Space Nine? Like, did his memories come back? What happened to Thomas Riker? You know, there's so many different threads that were left unresolved that tie into Star Trek Next Generation. I wanted them to do a miniseries, but I wanted it done on HBO. And the reason why I wanted it done on HBO, because this is before Netflix, this was before CBS All Access, this was before streaming services were an option. The reason why I said HBO is because I wanted a more adult Star Trek. I wanted a more contemporary Star Trek. I wanted them to do not one-and-done episodes like The Next Generation. I wanted them to do a story arc. You know, if they wanted to show things they couldn't show on Star Trek, I wanted them to be able to show it. You know, whether that be, you know, sex or violence or so on and so forth. Well, you know, fast forward 10 years, and that's what we're getting on CBS All Access, because on CBS All Access, you can show violence, you can swear, and like I said, it's one of those cautionary tales. Be careful of what you wish for, because you just might get it, and that's what has happened here. And I'm pointing the finger at myself, because I thought this is what I would want. You know, I would want a Star Trek where you would see, you know, these types of things, and I don't want to see them now. Like, I thought it was something I wanted. It's not what I want. The violence, you know, like that we're seeing on Star Trek Picard, and which we've seen on Star Trek Discovery. I mean, there was Star Trek in previous Star Treks, there was violence in previous Star Treks. But not to this extent, not to this graphicness. Aside from that, what I mentioned from season one of TNG, the conspiracy episode, that's probably the most graphic we've ever seen Star Trek become. But at the same time, we didn't. It was tame compared to what we saw in episode 5 of Picard. And it's not just the violence; it's the profanity. Like, people are dropping the F-bomb on Star Trek, and it just blows my mind. It's you know, like, in Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, you know, when they went back to 1986 San Francisco, and you saw Captain Kirk say, double dumbass on you. Or you saw, you know, Spock tell Admiral Kirk, one damn minute, Admiral. You know, when you saw that punk rocker, you know, give Captain Kirk the finger. You know, like, it was funny because, you know, like, that was contemporary, you know, 1986 San Francisco. Like, it, you know, it was funny to see these characters not used to this, you know, this language, having to deal with it. On Star Trek Generations, when the Enterprise is going to crash onto the planet and Data says, oh, shit. You know, like, that was a funny moment. You know, like, everyone burst out laughing in the theater because, you know, you'd never heard Data say that before. But literally, like, I know in Star Trek Discovery, you know, you got Tilly and Stamets, the engineer, you know, they're dropping the F-bomb back and forth to each other. Star Trek Picard, you know, they've dropped the F-bomb. Like, the Admiral. So in the first episode, I think it was the first episode, no, second episode, Picard goes to a meeting with the head of Starfleet Command, the CIC, the admiral of all admirals. And she starts swearing at Picard. She starts saying the F-bomb to Picard. This is the head of Starfleet Command. And she's dropping the F-bomb at probably the most decorated living Starfleet officer, you know, former Starfleet officer that they have. And she's treating him like he's nothing and using the F word, you know? Like, but on CBS All Access, you can show violence, you can use profanity, but just because you can doesn't mean you should. This is Star Trek, after all. This is supposed to be a positive vision of the future. So on this one group I'm on Facebook, there was a gentleman that was on there, and he wrote something Then I'm going to repeat. His name is Terry Rhodes. From what he says, he knew Gene Roddenberry. So he's making a comment about what I've just said. Gene was a classic liberal. I'm reading what he wrote. He believed in an optimistic future for humanity where all the stupid class divisions had been overcome. Now, Star Trek is all about division along class lines. It is about hatred and categorizing people because of who they are. It is about lens flares, explosions, murdering beloved characters, and screaming fuck at other beloved characters. It is about debasing those characters and turning them into pitiful shells of who they once were. It is about castrating them after repeatedly kicking them in the balls. Gene is spinning in his grave. He would have hated this shit. And I knew him personally. He would hate this shit. Yeah, like I said, I don't know if this guy actually knew Gene Roddenberry. I'm taking him for his word that he did. But this, I share this guy's sentiments. Like, I don't like what they're doing. I really don't. And like I said, like, I haven't given up on Picard. I'm still sticking with it. You know, there are some good things about this. Like I said, you know, like, I don't completely agree with what they're doing. This is not what I imagined, you know, 2 years ago. Or a year and a half ago when this was announced at San Diego Comic-Con, like, I really thought, fingers crossed, we would still see Picard on the bridge of the Enterprise. Maybe it was his final mission. Unfortunately, that is not the route they went. But, you know, I'm not against what they're doing. But I am against the profanity and the death and the overall, like, disrespect for human life. Like, to me, it's not Star Trek. Like, this, if you told me this was a spinoff of Battlestar Galactica, I might have bought it, because there was a lot of death and killing in Battlestar Galactica, because the nature of that story is them fighting for their lives. Like, they're, you know, they're being hunted. I'm referring to the 2004 Battlestar Galactica by Ronald Moore. That was the nature of that story. Like, they're being chased, they're being hunted. You know, like, it was a very dark, dystopian story. Star Trek's not supposed to be dark or dystopian. It's supposed to be a positive vision of the future. Whether people agree with it, like, I know I've seen a lot of people say, well, you know, in 300 years, do you really think humanity's going to get, you know, be done with money and everyone's going to be happy-go-lucky? Honestly, probably not. But why can't we have a show that has that? This is a TV show. Like, Star Trek's always been, for the most part, about a positive vision for the future. And I think we really need to get back to that. But anyway, sorry, that was my rant. That was, I'm stepping off the soapbox. I'm stepping off the soapbox now. But, Miss M or Kevin, do you have any comments you want to throw out there? Or Kev, you said you had some questions, possibly?
Quick thing, and then I'll go to your overall point. So, the episode you're talking about earlier with all the torture and gore and everything.
Episode 5, yeah.
There's been numerous TV shows that do an opening like that, and you're like, what in the hell is going on? Mm-hmm. And nothing makes sense, and you're not understanding characters' decisions, and it seems so against what the show usually is, and then you have, you know, the opening credits and the actors' names and the music and everything. And when it comes back, I'll say 24 hours earlier. It's like, okay, you're going to show me how we got there. Mm-hmm. And then the scene will make more sense in context.
Yeah.
And you can forgive a lot that way. Now, I know you're certainly not reacting to, you know, that first opening 5-10 minutes, whatever. So I'm sure that didn't resonate better later in the episode or the next episode or whatever. It still stood out as, what the hell are you doing? Like, you're going too far here. But Star Trek, for me, in my experiences and what I've seen and all, Star Trek is supposed to be for families. In a way.
Exactly, yeah.
like, you can throw on original or next generation, any of them, until this, apparently, the movies for most part, and a kid's going to watch it and get one level of it, and an adult's going to watch it and get another level for it, but you can watch it together, and it's safe and it's okay. You don't need to go this grim, gritty, realistic, dark way with Star Trek. Very similar to Superman, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hey, you can just be good. You can have all this bad stuff around you. You can do a lot for a conflict, or, you know, a character development, or a difference in opinion, or, you know, whatever it might be, to build your tension and your drama. But you don't have to go dark. You can do that with Batman, of course. The way you're describing Star Trek, you said Battlestar, it's more like, hey, let's do Star Trek meets Firefly. Mm-hmm. With, you know, the drama and the deaths and the, you know, sex and violence and, you know, everything else for it.
Mm-hmm.
And it works for some things, and for certain things it's perfectly fine, and it's that world. But that's not Star Trek. I'll agree with you right away. You shouldn't have the swearing like that. A damn, a hell, you know, Data saying, oh shit, which is just, what would a human say in this situation? Probably say, oh shit. So I'm going to say, oh shit. It completely makes sense, and it gets the joke, and a little kid watching it can be all tee hee, ha ha, and mm-hmm. it's fine. And it doesn't hurt anything. But you should never have an F-bomb in Star Trek. I don't see the point of that.
No.
And you can have, you know, a gore of violence to a certain level to make a point. You know, hey, if we're not terrified by these villains, then how, you know, then are they really villainous? You know, we need to make a threat here. I totally understand that. But, I mean, this sounds like... It sounds like another show with a Star Trek coat over it.
It really does feel that way. And you made an excellent point. Star Trek used to be a family show. A show that you could watch with, like, say, your six-year-old. I used to watch it when I was a little kid. You know?
Yeah.
This show, I would not... Like, my kids are a little bit older. They can watch this now. But, you know, I've got an 8-year-old nephew. I've got, you know, a 2-year-old niece, 1-year-old nephew. I would never show this in front of them. I would never have this on the TV in the room with them in the room. It is not a family show. And it should be. Star Trek at its core was a family show. Like, yes, you had the odd time when you would see the violence. But a lot of violence, you know, because like I said, the problem is CBS All Access, they can do whatever they want, right? So I find...
But that doesn't mean you should.
Exactly. But it's also, I think, a way for writers to be lazy. You know, before they would have to, you know, tell a story in a way where they couldn't show the violence, but they had to show that it was there. That bad things happened, right? Like Picard, you know, for example, in Best of Both Worlds, you know, he was abducted by the Borg, and he's, you know, when he's meeting with them on the cube, he tells them, I'll resist you with my last ounce of strength, and they tell him, you know, resistance is futile, strength is irrelevant, we're gonna assimilate you. And they do. And you know that... probably was not good. Like, that was probably a torturous experience, which we, you know, we really see the ramifications of it. Kind of at the end of Best of Both Worlds Part 2, like when you see Picard look out the window and just that look on his face, like you realize he's been through something very bad. And then mm-hmm. in the next episode, when he goes back to his family's vineyard and he's fighting with his brother, and he starts crying, and he tells his brother, you know, they used me to kill and to destroy, and I couldn't stop them, and he's crying, and you realize, you know, they did bad things to him. Like, they really, you know, put him through the ringer. Like, it was a very traumatic experience. So they showed PTSD, and they showed, you know, that he went through bad things without actually showing it, right?
Yeah.
They relied on the writing and the acting of Patrick Stewart to sell it that happened. Like, just because you can show somebody getting their eye ripped out doesn't mean you should show it. You know, to me, it's just lazy writing. Yeah. But
well, and who's it for? So you have all your previous Star Trek fans that are not happy with this because it's not the Star Trek they grew up with. You're certainly not attracting a new viewer for this. Yep. So who are you making it for?
I honestly don't know. It's not for me, but I know there are a lot of people that do love the Star Trek Discovery and do love Picard. And, you know, if you speak ill of it, they really attack you on social media. I know that for a fact. So there is an audience for it, but... And again, I'm not against, you know, changing and evolving, but this is Star Trek. Like, this is not at the core of what Star Trek is. Like, another example I'll throw out there is Chain of Command Part 2. Like, that's the episode of Next Generation where Picard is abducted by the Cardassians and he's tortured. And they actually made that episode, like Patrick Stewart had a hand in selling this to get this done, because he was doing a lot of work with Amnesty International and he really wanted to do a Star Trek story where they address torture, right? So in that episode, you know, basically, like, the, you know, they bring Picard in and they tell him, like, yeah, we've implanted a device onto your heart and we can make you, you know, I can torture you by pushing this button. And that's all this guy does. That's all Gul Madred does, is he literally has a remote control that he pushes a button and you see Patrick Stewart fall to the ground in pain. And Patrick Stewart sells it because he's a good actor. So, you know, they sold this episode on torture and you believed it because Patrick Stewart sold it. You really felt his pain. You knew he was being tortured. You knew that what he was going through was terrible, but they didn't actually really show the torture. They just showed a guy pushing a remote control. If this episode was done now, you would see Picard being waterboarded. You would see Picard, yeah. You would see, yeah, them pulling out his fingernails. You would see them stabbing him. You know, like that is what they would do now. And to me, that's just lazy writing, you know. But, like, back in the day, because of the rules of syndication, depending on what Star Trek series, I mean, the original series, Voyager and Enterprise were on network television. Next Generation and Deep Space Nine were on syndication. So they had a bunch of rules they had to follow. So they couldn't show, you know, blood. They couldn't show, torture. Traditional torture, you know, so they had to come up with creative ways of telling the story and selling it, and they did it because they were good writers and they were good actors. On this show and with Discovery, they're just not good writers. They're really not, and they're having to stoop down to cheap tricks and things like profanity and violence to create buzz instead of people talking about how great, you know, that episode was. The main topic of discussion for episode 5 was, oh my god, what did I just see? So in a way, like, they're getting it, the attention they want, but it's, of course, the bad attention.
Yeah.
But I don't know, like, in one of the beautiful things about Star Trek, one of the things, like, my mom used to, like, because growing up, I watched a lot of Star Trek. I was a Star Trek nerd, you know, big time. And my mom wasn't always happy with how much television I was watching. Like, I was kind of a couch potato. But she said, you know, I don't mind you watching Star Trek because it is a good show. Like, it's a positive show for you to watch. But I can't say that about Picard. I can't say that about Discovery. Those are not positive shows for any kids to watch. Let alone a family. Like, and it's too bad. Like, there were the odd episodes of Star Trek. Like, my parents are not Star Trek fans. My sister's not a Star Trek fan. But there was the odd episode that I could shoehorn in to get them to watch it. You know, like the episode Fistful of Data's, you know, like the Western episode from Next Generation. Like, they all watched it. They all laughed. They loved it. It was a fun family show to watch. You know, I wish we could go back to that. I really do. But, again, I'll step off the soapbox. Miss M, did you have anything to add before we call the episode?
Well, I mean, just that I agree with y'all. You know, one of the things that I got out of watching Star Trek The Next Generation was this idea that they were a family. And so watching that was like, there was like a wholesomeness to it, even though there were, you know, there was the occasional violence. There were like bigger themes that were going on that, you know, kind of like how to be good in a world where like there are maybe some people that maybe don't want to be good, you know, mm-hmm. but it always seemed more like a show that like a family could watch. So these newer shows do seem, you know, very opposite of what they were doing back then.
Yes, and again, it goes back to be careful what you wish for, because, like, honestly, back in 2009, when I heard that J.J. Abrams and the Bad Robot guys were taking over Star Trek, I was ecstatic. I thought they would make it great again. And Alex Kurtzman's one of those Bad Robot guys. He is, you know, and now he's running the Star Trek TV shows, and it's not what I envisioned that would be happening. But
yeah.
Again, I want more Star Trek in my Star Trek. That's my final thought. All right, so let's play that little game of where can we find you on the internet. Miss M, where can we find you?
So you can find me on the internet with my blog, diaryofadorkette.blogspot.com. I'm also on Instagram and Twitter under Diary of a Dorkette or Dorkette Tweets.
Excellent. And Kevin, where can we find you, sir?
You can find my blog, Facebook link, Twitter link, Instagram link. All of it is Mast Library.
Excellent. You can check out my blog at www.randomnerdness.blogspot.com. I'm also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at ChrisLock1701. Be sure to check out the Pop Culture Pub podcast group on Facebook. Send a request to join, and I'm sure I'll approve it. We focus on positive pop culture news and discussions. Last group count was at 195 members. I'm also an admin at the Incredible Fans of the Incredible Hulk. It's a group on Facebook. And the last member count was at 1,047. All right. So on behalf of myself and on behalf of Miss M and Mr. Kevin Decent, I want to thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to listen to the Pop Culture Pub podcast. This was our top negative OMG moments in pop culture, and we will see you again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.